This is episode 128 of The Variety Artist. This is John Abrams, your host, and that guy that interviews successful variety artists from around the world every single week. We've all followed the advice of famous people we know, our mentors. Some of them have even been on this show. Well, today you're going to meet a future mentor, somebody that has changed the landscape of the entertainment business, somebody that's thrived through many ups and downs. You're going to learn how to engage your audience through the virtual screen, why it's so important to have a team, the secret of keeping employees happy, why face painting can be a great option, some secrets of digital marketing, and why we entertainers are leading the way in this new normal. And by the way, if you haven't already, make sure to join the Variety Arts Community Facebook group. There's Free for All Fridays where you can promote yourself any way you like, and Marketing Monday, the first Monday of every month, you can post your toughest marketing challenges and someone there will answer. All sorts of cool things. Check it out. Now on with the show.
Welcome to The Variety Artist, providing aspiring artists and entertainers with in-depth discussions from top performers from all over the world. So get ready to book some gigs, make some money, and have some fun with your host, John Abrams.
Along with her company, Happily Ever Laughter, Faye has created enchanted fairy tale experiences for over 500,000 children since 2006. With a gigantic troupe of performers and ultra-high standards, Faye knows how to run an entertainment agency. Variety Artists, I give you Faye Diddle Diddle.
Hello, grown-ups.
How's it going, Faye?
It's beautiful in sunny Santa Cruz, California. How are you?
Oh, I'm good. I'm down here in Southern California, not far from Disneyland.
Not far from closed Disneyland.
Yeah. from what I understand, it's one of the only large theme parks that's still closed around the world.
Wow, really? And Universal too, correct?
Yeah. Both in Southern California. They opened the Disneyland in Japan. Disney World in Florida has been open for quite a while now.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Remember when we thought that everything would be maybe open in the fall?
I think when this thing first started, I said to myself, oh, 2-3 weeks, we'll be done with it and I'll just move on with my life. Yeah.
Yeah. 2 months. That's what we were thinking.
Yeah. And we're recording this October. What is it? October 26th. So now it's been
2045. Yeah.
It seems like 2020 has been like 20 years. Huh? All right. Well, first tell us what Happily Ever Laughter is and how you became involved in it and how you created it.
It's a cult. I'm just kidding. We're internally, we say, you know, it's not a cult. It's kind of cult.
We just lost half of our listeners.
Pretty much a cult. No, I run a children's entertainment company. The reason why we're so tightly, I guess, together, mm-hmm. Our group is a pretty tightly knit group of performers, is because we have a lot of room to express our own individual creative sides. Unlike a lot of children's entertainment companies where they, you know, portray Disney characters or, you know, they impersonate popular characters that exist. We don't do that. That has just allowed a lot of the quirky creative creatures to come out of the woodwork and all find a common voice here. So people end up working here for a really long time, creates a really wonderful family environment, which translates directly to our shows.
Well, yeah. In fact, that was one of my questions a little later. And I'm going to ask you a little bit later, what is the secret? I think you just told me the secret of having a great agency is having
Red Bull. Is it? Yeah. A lot of Red Bull.
Tell me why fairies drink Red Bull.
We have a lot to do. it gives you wings, sir.
Well, now I read since this COVID thing happened that you booked over 600 play dates with your company and with your folks.
Yeah, it was wild. We did I'm so tired of that word pivot. We did the pivot at the beginning. And I think the advantage that we had is that my creative director and performance manager, she is incredibly good with coming up with brand new material and then teaching it to our performers in a very efficient way. And I have more of the tech side. So I do the website and filming and putting together ads and things together. I don't think we slept for 3 weeks. I'm not even kidding, which is crazy because we have a ton of kids between us. Yeah. So we were juggling that too. yeah, we just did it all. And our employees trust us, thank goodness. And they just jumped in and relearned everything. And I think our clients really know that we're not going to mess around. Like if we're going to do something, it's going to be really fancy, you know? And so they trusted us, but we were also the beginning, right? Entertainers were just kind of like all of you out there listening. I'm sure all of you were trying to figure out, what am I going to do?
Right.
I mean, is Zoom.
That one day, I've mentioned this a number of times, that one day or 2 days, actually, I lost 60 gigs in 2 days. And I'm sure you know, doing 600, I'm sure you lost many more than that. I mean, how quickly did you pivot?
Oh my God. We lost, I mean, same, like we just have different scales, but same level of blow, right?
Yeah.
We lost probably $750,000 of shows. Within 2 weeks, thousands of shows were gone. And all those giant contracts, you know, everyone listening knows exactly what everyone just went through, right?
Yeah.
The minute I think I saw the 20th cancellation, I knew it was going to filter from those giant contracts to the smaller families, because smaller families would start to get nervous. And, you know, and this was before the lockdown. So we kind of had, and, you know, all entertainers really had an incredible insight into what was about to happen. You know, a lot of people who aren't in the entertainment world probably had maybe another week or two to get their head around it. We were, in a way, able to jump on to virtual stuff first. Like I saw a lot of magicians do it. Yeah. If you're in a live music group, they were doing those concerts in cul-de-sacs for people. Like,
right. I have a good friend who's a musician who rented a stage out in the middle of the desert and did a concert out in the middle of the desert with social distancing for his entire audience. Yeah.
That's amazing.
That's what he did to pivot. Pardon that word. That word yeah. keeps coming up, doesn't it?
I know.
But that's what he did. And he's done it over and over, week after week after week.
Uh-huh. Entertainment is a dance, right? Your audience has to trust you. You have to trust the audience. It's this back and forth. We kind of, not we as in Happily Ever After, but as in all entertainers, we led what it was going to look like. You know, those first people, those first musicians, those first online people, like, I applaud all of you. You were trailblazers. And then watch, like, teachers started looking to entertainers. How did you keep the students involved? You know, how did you get children to pay attention to you? How do you do a live concert that doesn't just suck?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I know that we're all going through it, but be proud of yourself.
That's a discussion that I have with lots of my magician friends, in that a live performance is exciting and something. A virtual performance, it has to be made for the screen, made for the computer, made for a virtual show, as opposed to just doing your stage performance on screen.
Yeah.
It doesn't quite work. You have to really embrace the tech.
I hate virtual performing. I'm not a fan. There's many beautiful things, right? Like we now perform worldwide, which, you know, we only performed in California,
right,
in the United States before. So, you know, that's cool. But overall, it's not my favorite medium. We did a lot of things to try to make it not feel virtual. What are some of the things that you've heard other entertainers do?
Well, I've heard kind of a range, everything from converting their stage show to a virtual show, to embracing the tech, because our competition is no longer the next guy on stage. Mm-hmm. It's YouTube, it's TV, it's everything
Netflix.
That you see on a screen. So when this all started happening, a lot of my friends started studying YouTube videos and TV commercials, and they shortened their shows, and they started creating pieces. I think the better ones started creating pieces that used all of the tech tricks that YouTubers and such did. Though I think those are the ones that have been the most successful over time.
That's wonderful. If you really get in there and work hard, and that's another expression that we hear it, you just have to work really hard, but it's like eyes bleeding level hard. I mean, you are breaking into a whole new world where people are used to passively watching, right, on a screen.
Right.
In fact, that was one of the first things that I was laying on the floor of my living room with my coworker. Her name is Meadow, actually, and my performance manager. And we were both laying on the floor, just kind of pulling our hair out, thinking, what are we going to do we hate the computer. Yeah. And she was throwing some ideas around, and I kind of got up and I threw a pillow at her, and I was like, we need to have the children hold something. There needs to be this exchange, a physical exchange between our performers and the child, but that, because that's what really works, right? But yeah. How do you do that? How do you do that through a screen? So we decided to be nuts and start shipping things to families before the show. We have the identical thing on our side of the screen. So we make it appear during a magic trick, and then we have it disappear into their couch, which is, you know, what's wild about that is like, it seems simple. My daughter is 7. She was 6 at the time when I was designing this. She watched me build the website. She watched us train. She watched us do the photo shoots. She watched every part of this. She knows everything behind the scenes. And she said, Mama, can I please have a fairy play with me on the computer so I could have a present appear in the couch? And I was like, dude, your suspension of disbelief is wild.
You're like, I may have something here. You know, we forget, though, that they're kids.
I teach
a lot of magic. And sometimes I'll be working on a brand new trick to teach a child. And I'll say, oh, this isn't very good. But then I'll do it in front of a 7-year-old or an 8-year-old. And they're like, they're shocked and amazed at it. So I think we as adults forget that they have fun, creative, imaginative minds.
Yeah. I guess you could really translate that into what this whole experience is, right? Like, you know, when you're learning a new magic trick and you're failing, or you're performing it for the first time and you think it, you know, went over a little flat, you don't know how the audience is going to react until you do it. And you don't know how the child is going to react until you do it. You just have to Just do it. Stop making excuses.
You probably solved a problem that a lot of kids had because they're all on lockdown. Why do you think it's important to have kind of a magical buddy or a magical fairy visit you?
Because parents are completely tapped. They cannot listen to their kids talk about Minecraft anymore. Yeah. But we can. That's our angle is... I really believe this is important for all entertainers, and you know, really professional entertainers understand this. You have to leave a space for your audience to interact with you because it's a conversation, and that's what really gets them involved in the story, you know? And when you do that, whether it just be through applause or, you know, gentle audience participation, you build a stronger relationship. With children, we allow many different opportunities for them to speak, and we've trained our performers to pull that information out of them in very specific ways incredibly quickly, because that's how you get them to stay during the whole Zoom call. Unlike, you know, grandma and grandpa on the Zoom call, they're there for 5 seconds and they're gone. So,
yeah. Oh, yeah. You're there with the kids or kid.
Yeah. We learn a lot about what's going on in their world.
And well, something I noticed on your website here in Southern California, of course, I look at all the different Facebook groups. And one of the ones that I follow is a face painting group, and everybody is out of work. Yet you figured out a way to do face painting online, and you don't have to give away the secret if you don't want, but I'm going to ask.
Go ask for it.
Okay. How are you doing face painting online?
You know, I loved when you asked me about doing this program because, you know, it's a chance for me to actually speak to fellow entertainers. I believe that when we work together, we end up building something greater. The more that we can pool our resources and figure out how to prop each other up, we're going to become better entertainers and have the public receive us in a better way, right? I would love to share how we do that.
Yep.
So what we did is, it's kind of blending things into marketing world. So face painting, right? If you just think about face painting, you're like, all right, I gotta paintbrush and a paint thing and then a face. Let's go, right? But that's not what face painting is. Face painting is a connection that you have with the person. It's a transformation. It's touching on a little artistic side. It's all these other words, right? Yeah. So we decided to sit back and really think about all the other aspects of face painting that you don't really think about. Face painting is the feature. And you got to think about the benefits.
Right.
So we thought, what benefits of face painting can we still offer. We went from that direction. And that is where you're going to really break through a lot of things, like even to the point where we had to come up with what it was called, face painting lesson. Nobody wakes up in the morning and wants a face painting lesson, yeah, you know? So just keep running things through your brain like that. Like, am I saying new card trick? Nobody cares.
Yeah, it's true.
Is that clear enough? I'm happy to explain more.
So you're doing face painting lessons online. So kind of elaborate on that.
Most of the face painting lessons that are available right now, whatever that, you know, generally look like, is a YouTube tutorial with one person looking at the screen and teaching you a wonderful design, right? Mm-hmm. There weren't a lot of live online classes because those were either for professional face painters, and now there's maybe a bit more because it's, you know, virtual conferences and stuff like that. But it just didn't exist for children, these live classes. And so I took the combination of our staff really knowing how to get kids to open up quickly. I took those little tricks and decided, okay, we're just going to teach them. A lot of this was my pal Meadows' brain power. We're going to get them to just work with a brush and work with some stamps and work with some stickers and make a whimsical design so that they felt successful, but you know, they're not painting tigers.
Yeah,
you know?
Right.
Like I mentioned earlier with my daughter, I have a son who's 9. And
how many kids do you have?
I have too many, two.
I have two, but they're grown up.
Yeah, this is a pile. It's so expensive. So my son is over what I do. And so are Meadows' children, just over it. And he did the face painting lesson. He actually asked for it. And I watch him take that face painting kit out all the time.
Oh.
He put himself into like a robot and stuff I never taught him. And I never followed up with a YouTube lesson or anything. I know my kid. He gets super frustrated. And that also clicked. I'm like, this is different because they're not learning a very specific skill. We're just teaching them that they are allowed to work with this. This is for children. You know, you love stickers and all these things anyway. Here, have it. And because there's a low stress level there, I think they enjoy it a lot more and then continue to go back.
You could even advertise, and it's something that I advertise when I'm teaching magic, is tons of on and offline experiences.
Yeah. Fun. Our new line is your children will just disappear into their room to face paint and chill.
That's good. I like that. All right. Well, let's talk people. Cause one of the things that I have absolutely no experience in is having a bunch of employees or / contractors. I'm not sure what it is in your particular company. Mm-hmm. How many employees do you have?
So we have been doing the employee thing, which is a positive and a negative, obviously, many more than just one. We had at the, right before COVID, 50, it was usually about 50 of us, 5 to 6 people who work in the office behind the scenes to keep things running. And then the rest are the performers.
I see. Now, what is your hiring process? One of the most important things are people you get along with, even more than people that have high skills. Right?
You get to pick your friends.
Yeah.
I started out as a children's entertainer for, you know, another company. Obviously, I learned how to do that sort of thing. But what makes somebody very good at that is to be able to read people quickly, mm-hmm. right? You can read your audience. You know exactly which person in the audience is going to work well.
Yeah.
Certain trick. So if you have that, you are more likely to succeed as being an entertainer. Thank goodness I developed that for a long time. And now when I do meet people, I know within 2 seconds, you know, if they're going to be good or not. Of course, I give them more than 2 seconds, but
you're like, it's "Hi, how are you? Right. See ya."
Yeah, it's kind of a bummer actually when you get the first impression, and I usually have a team with me so that I'm not just feeling like I'm nuts. Mm-hmm. We have yelled at each other now, like literally yelled at each other. Stop making decisions that aren't from your gut. Stop it. Because every time we're wrong, we have to go with our gut. I mean, we're sending people into people's living rooms, right? Like they have to feel like a friend. And that's what's most important to me.
Right. Now, what's the key to keeping your employees happy?
Partying.
Once they're hired. What is it?
Partying. Yeah. I mean, we're a party company, right? Like we all have that in common. Just face it. I actually had a meeting with my husband has a business too. And I was looking for some bigger, headier advice a few years ago. And so he set me up with an investor that he had. And we just kind of sat for a while. And after 20 minutes, the conversation actually flipped because he was like, wait a minute, how long do your employees stay? Wait, like, mm-hmm. what do you guys do for, you know, company culture? And I ended up talking to him for a long time because he said he had never really figured out how to do that in any of his companies. But when I say partying, what I mean is just sharing a lot of moments together in situations where you can see the highs and lows of your personalities quickly, right? And generally that's a party. So we throw 3-day fairy retreats is what we call them. So all the fairies come together. I rent, you know, like a mansion, or the last few years we've made less money, so it's at my house. And I hire other entertainers so they get entertained for once, and they just, nobody else is allowed. They get to bond. Basically, I've handpicked 50 people at a time that all have something in common. And then they all get together and they're like, what? I've never had 50 of me in one spot before. They get really connected, and it makes it worth it for me because, you know, I don't always make a ton of money with this and I got to do it for some reason.
We all kind of look for our tribe. I'm a member of Kid Dabra, California. We all are magicians, entertainers, balloon artists, and we have found our tribe. You know, when we get together, we talk about very specific things that are within our group. And it makes me very happy when I go to those.
Yeah. If you don't have a tribe or your group or whatever, find one. There's got to be one. And if, you know, if you're asking any other entertainer, I'm just speaking to the audience. If you're asking any other entertainer for any other advice, if that is missing from your artillery, is that what you call it? Get that first.
Yeah. Let's talk about marketing, because this is kind of your wheelhouse, right? Marketing. So I looked at your website. It's fantastic. The pictures, the fonts, the colors.
Thanks.
how do you go about choosing all that stuff and creating kind of a cohesive thing?
A lot of that website was built by some developers. So there's a plugin called Elementor. That is a pretty easy tool for developing, you know, squeeze pages and landing pages and anything that I wanted to build outside of the majorly complicated stuff on our website. The core of the site was built by developers. I did the rest.
Your website is terrific, but it's not the only thing nowadays. Nowadays, there's all sorts of other digital marketing. Tell us about some other digital marketing we can do.
Yeah. So one, you need to find where your audience is, which seems really simple, but it's not. Years ago, I noticed, and some of you old timers probably noticed, website traffic just disappeared. And then up popped Gig Masters and Gig Salad and Thumbtack and all that stuff. And what I knew was happening right away is that they were taking all of our money, all of those enrollment fees, and they just shoved it right back into Google AdWords so that they could outrank all of our sites. And all the entertainer sites got pushed to the very bottom. And that was my first like, uh-oh, people can't find me online anymore. What am I going to do? Well, I could be mad about that for a while, which I still am.
Yeah, I couldn't tell.
Yeah, I'm angry because, you know, if you create something like that, it is a good idea. It's an awesome idea, especially for entertainers that don't have tech savvy sense, right? It's a calendar. It's a landing page. It's a chance to get in front of, you know, other people without having your own advertising budget. Like, cool. The problem is that what they built is aiming toward the customer, which is understandable, but it just pitches entertainers against each other on things that are not actually comparable. Like Thumbtack, right? You'll see a magician who's $500 and then a magician who's $40, and then the prices are right next to each other. What are you supposed to do? It's not right. So anyway, that was my frustration. You got to find the audience, right? And another thing you need to keep in mind is one, you got to look for where your audience is two, what they call figuring out which stage your audience is in the decision-making process.
Real quick, let's go back to where your audience is. We know our audience is of course online, but are you you're talking about Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, those type of things too?
Well, anything in the world. It could be, I know that my audience is often found at the farmer's market. Like I know that I could sell to anyone there, or I know that everyone that I usually work with is probably on Instagram. Like, you know where your niches are.
Right.
And you can't pick them all. You need to pick one or two and then really, really understand them before you head in there. If you can kill it at a farmer's market, you don't need Instagram, Facebook, all this website. Like you don't need it. You just have to do a very, very good job at one spot and then just branch out a smidge.
Got it. So now what about the decision-making process or the buying process you were talking about?
So when, do you use social media?
A little bit.
A little bit. Do you prefer Facebook, Instagram?
I prefer Facebook probably because of my age, I imagine.
I actually prefer it too, because I've been working with it longer. Also, yeah. I'm older. When you're on Facebook, aside from, you know, working on your podcast page, like it's your own pleasure time, right?
Right.
You're not shopping. Whereas when you're going into Google and you're typing in Christmas wedding cake or whatever, whatever you want for lunch.
I usually have Christmas wedding cake for lunch. That's right.
It's good. I'm glad we have that in common. So you need to think about what they're thinking about. So I know that people who go into Google who are in lower down the buying process, right? They're closer to wanting that Christmas wedding cake. Mm-hmm. They're starting to think in their head, God, I'm hungry. I don't know. I think, oh yeah, that cake that I wanted. Oh yeah, Christmas wedding cake. And then they go to Google and they type it in. And that's when you're going to see Gig Salad and Gig Masters and then eventually your website 20 pages later pop up there. Let's see if I can tie this together. Remember earlier when I said, I really believe that entertainers should work together. I really believe that once we share more of our information and help one another, absolutely, we're going to be able to do greater things, right?
Yep.
So, okay, so stilt walking became really important at one point. And then fire dancing, and then aerial, right? But these things were not in the public understanding of entertainment for quite some time. It was gradual, right? Stilt walking, in my opinion, is one of the original ones. So you can see more searches for stilt walkers for corporate stuff on Googlelandia than maybe you would an aerialist. But it's coming, right? It's coming up. So the language is incredibly important. The more that we work together, the faster the word aerialist would have entered the general public's mind.
See what you're saying. I see what you're saying. If we all get together... I totally understand. Yes.
Yeah. Our audience doesn't know what they want. They just want to be entertained. So we need to help people understand all these little nuances that we understand, but we need to teach our audience this so that they can actually get what they want. And then you do a good job because you're fit with the right audience, right? You don't want a stilt walker at, I don't know, an event where the ground is made of thin ice. I don't know.
Yeah.
Right. It's just going to fail. Like we've all been offered gigs that we know are going to fail.
A stilt walker at a hockey game probably isn't the best.
Exactly. So I don't think we're losing work by, you know, tipping our cards and sharing. It's just, we're going to put everybody in the right spot. So to tie that with the Google search, when people look for children's entertainers, they generally type in Elsa, right? Or Snow White. Right. Stuff I don't do. They don't type in just children's entertainer. It's sometimes that's not even in their register, you know? So I realized, okay, Google is basically dead for me now. It's over. I'm not going to win over the Elsa people. They're way too far down in the decision-making process, the buying-making process. And I'm not going to win over Gigmaster's price stuff because we're a premium company, you know? It's not going to happen. So that's when I went to Facebook first, because I was there. Also, you know, I'm in my mid-30s. A lot of people who hire us are around my age, a little bit older. So they're there too, right? But they're in a different way of thinking. So when you first blast onto Facebook, you're like, I got this deal for you. And here's a picture of my costume. And here's a picture of my cute shoes. And they don't care.
I just want to hear from Aunt Lucy.
They don't care. Yeah, exactly. So that has been the hardest thing to learn. And I have spent 3, maybe almost 4 years now studying hardcore with my co-fairy Meadow on how to market on social media. And it is so darn confusing, but I'm watching a lot of entertainers not figure it out too. And y'all, we got to pick up the pace, because your tech world is going to take you over and you will have no way to reach your audience anymore. So
yeah. And I imagine it's the same with Facebook, Twitter, all of those, because social media is exactly what it says, social media. People are being social on it. They're talking on it. You know, it's not a, it's not a place where you, just like you're saying, it's not a place where you're looking to purchase something.
Yeah.
Join groups and have like minds and all of
those. Groups. Yeah. You did a good job. You have a group on Facebook. If anyone, if it works in their world, the groups are being pushed hardcore by Facebook right now, or actually for the last couple of years. I did it by accident in like 2007 or 8. I just made a group for my performers and people told me they did not quit Happily Ever After for a long time because they wanted to stay in the group. The group was only for current performers. That's how powerful having a small community that you've built is. Facebook groups are great.
When I first put together the Variety Arts community group, I looked up online on YouTube the difference between a group and a page, because I didn't know the difference at the time.
Yeah.
I quickly discovered that when I have a page, if I were to create a page for my business, that's exactly what it is. And as people are becoming social, they're not looking at your business. They're not looking at your page for your business. You know, they want to be involved in a group of like-minded people.
Yeah, absolutely. And you get different controls too. But you know, there are some entertainers where, like myself, I did not make a group for my customers. I made a group for my staff because I decided, like I said earlier, you need to pick very few things and do an incredibly good job at those few things. I knew that I have been doing this since 2006. I still have a very hard time defining what it is that we do and what our customers think of us as. Years I've been holding like think tank sessions in our office. It is hard. it is really hard to nail it.
I mean, I've looked at your website and some different things, and it sure seems like you know what you're talking about. You may not think so, but from an outsider,
super critical. Yeah,
from an outsider's point, it sure looks like you know what you're doing.
We used to joke when we were trying to figure out what our like tagline was, not necessarily tagline. It was more just, what's that one liner that you use to define exactly what it is you do, right?
Yeah. Dan Kennedy calls it a USP. Yeah.
Oh, I love it. Yeah.
Unique
yeah.
Selling position. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. So when we were sitting around, we have a habit of laying on the ground and throwing things at each other. I'm realizing.
It's a good think tank.
Oh my God. At one point, man, we were just killing it. And we had a 4,000 square foot office downtown Santa Cruz. And my personal office was a 360 degree circular room made of glass.
Nice.
We had scooters. It was fun. So we were all laying around this circle room and trying to figure out what we were. And I remember somebody saying, okay. But there's like that beer company, their drinkable beer. And we need to figure out like sittable chair. Like, what are we? And then somebody said, we're hireable playmates. And I was like, oh yeah, great. Pornography. Awesome. Not good.
That rolls off the tongue.
Yeah. But it was the right start, right? Because it's true. You know, we are somebody that children play with. You can hire us, you know, you just got to get so simple. And that's how we ended up coming up with Magic Delivered, which was at least 4 years in the making.
I like that. All right. Well, we're going to move on to fact or something John just made up. Sound like fun?
No.
No. Okay. Well, we won't. We'll do it tomorrow when we're not recording this.
Go for it. I'm ready.
Is it fact? Or is it something John just made up?
Ah. Here's what's going to happen. I'm going to give you a headline and you're going to tell me whether it's true or not. And if it is true, tell me a little more about it. How does that sound?
Oh, is it like I'm on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me? I'm so excited.
Kind of like or Two Truths and a Lie type of thing. Okay. Wait, Wait, Don't. What is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me?
What are you talking about?
Oh, we're going to play a little game. Okay, well, here's what's going to happen. I already just told you what's going to happen. Okay, are you ready?
Ready. Okay. You don't know what Wait, Wait, Don't Tell. Okay, I'm ready.
No, I really don't. I really don't.
Someday what is you that? Will. You're going to figure it out after this.
Tell me what it is. Well, I'm going to look it up online.
It's a daily, it's a news quiz by NPR. It's hilarious. It's a comedy program, but anyway.
Okay. I haven't listened to NPR in a while. All right. You ready? Here we go. Faye fought for 2 years to have fairy wings as part of the workers' comp definition of what a uniform is.
Oh, that is a really creative headline to create. To come up with. Yes, that is true.
That is true.
It's true.
Fairy wings? So how did that come? Well, I mean, I guess I can guess how it came about, but tell me the process.
Well, you know, Prop 22 and AB5 and all that stuff. Way at the beginning, I decided that that was definitely going to come down the pike. So I had everyone become employees. Wow, I'm not going to get super into that. But
yeah, by the way, real quick, before you go on, we in California have something called AB5 that, long story short, converts contractors into employees that will be catching on across the country. But it's my understanding that there are a lot of states that don't have something like that yet.
That's true. That's true. Yeah. Well, I knew that if I couldn't survive financially with an employee status for my staff, I shouldn't build out the company, because that's, in my opinion, silly to build something so big when you know eventually things are going to change. Yeah. So I did that. What's my point? Oh, so we got workers' comp, which is one of the first things you need to do when you have an employee. Well, workers' comp was like, fairies? Yeah. They didn't know what to do with us. So they put us into a class code. They were like, well, I guess you face paint. So like maybe you're a beauty school. And I said, sure, whatever you want. So for years, we were classified under this thing. And then one day they called me and they said, hey, by the way, we've decided to change your class code. You are now going to be in the theater code, which meant I would have had a bill for $200,000 that they wanted to give me from 2 years prior. Like they wanted to go backward. Oh, nice. And then every single year after that, like basically my rates would have, you know, gone up by 900%. Like, wow. It was the end of the world news. I looked into the theater code and I was like, wait a minute, this is more expensive than a general contractor. I just hold bunny puppets and I sit in someone's living room while occasionally a child urinates on my knee. Like, this is not the same as putting in a cabinet. So I started a fight. They said, you know, the only way you're going to win and create a class code that is for you is if you have a giant amount of you that are exactly the same all across the United States, like the Boy Scouts, right? Or the Boys and Girls Club or the Taxi Association. Like, you have to be that big. Massage therapists. And I knew that there's a lot of entertainers, but I knew that not very many of us were big enough to hire employees. I was going to lose. I decided, and actually you interviewed another entertainer, Virginia Hankins, who owns Shiro's. And she and I were in touch a lot during that time because she also believes very firmly in building something that you can build into the future. Therefore, you have to be able to afford to have employees. Anyway.
Terrific interview, by the way, episode 127. Just saying.
Yeah. She's a real mermaid.
Yeah.
So I learned very quickly that no matter how eloquent my letters were and how much I had learned the system, you're not going to win against these people. You just can't. I eventually got a lawyer. One day I was granted an interview in person at the WCIRB, which is the place where they actually create the class codes. In this glass room overlooking Oakland, scared out of my mind. Wow. And my lawyer is sitting there. And that morning when I got dressed, I was like, okay, I'm doing lawyer stuff in like suit land. So I got to dress not business whimsical, I guess. I got to go straight. And I just was so mad after, it makes me want to cry. I was so mad after that 2-year fight and spending thousands of dollars. And I just was like, screw it. This is it. This is the end. I don't even care anymore. And I put on my favorite dress that has little baby animals that are being blown away in hot air balloons. And I put some flowers in my hair and I walked through our office and I just started ripping down these posters that we had on the wall for training, which I had created so that I could show a workers' comp, like, look, this is how we actually train people. We're not Cirque du Soleil. Yeah. I grabbed the things and I walked up and I walked in and I sat at the table and I spread out my posters and I just started to talk. And the lawyer never said a word. I just became what we all do. I connected with my audience, which was super scary suit guy, and then told my story. You know, he said, all right, you got it. This is wrong. Immediately, he put us into a class code for childcare. That's basically what we do. We're event childcare, right? He said, I'm going to work with you to make sure that other entertainers can get into this code. And I would like to have a new one written. Like, I couldn't believe it. I fell down in the elevator when I was leaving. Like, my knees gave out. Wow. Yeah. And Virginia actually was one of the first people that ended up getting into that class code too, so that she could take care of her employees. So it's been an incredible thing. And I know that I've changed the availability of workers' comp for entertainers for our whole country. So
congratulations. That's amazing.
Yay.
That's terrific. Terrific. Virginia, if you're listening to this, good job too.
Yeah. Proud of her.
All right. Next headline. Are you ready for this? Mm-hmm. Here we go. Faye visits Iceland yearly to hear about their belief in elves.
I am cold all the time. That is a no.
The only reason I thought of that, I watched Eurovision the other day. Have you seen that with Will Ferrell?
No, I have not. Is this a get back for not knowing? Wait, don't tell me.
It's yeah, exactly. That's what it is. It's getting you back for that. There's something about belief in elves in there. That's all I'll say. But it's a fun movie to watch. The last headline. Faye was fired once for having pink hair.
Yep. That is for sure.
That couldn't have been an entertainment agency, right?
It was actually, but you know, obviously there's bigger stories there, but I was a Disney entertainer for a while and I had changed my hair to pink. And so I couldn't fit into certain wigs. And I think that in combination with, I really don't know. I can't speak for everything that happened. I do really respect the person I used to work for. But that just was kind of the last straw, I think, for them. And yeah, it burned me for a couple of years because I loved what I did and I loved the person I worked for and I just couldn't believe that it could be over. And then that's when I was like, all right, you know what? I'm going to do this. I'm going to be an entertainer, but we're not going to do Disney because I don't want to step on her toes. I wanted to, you know, maintain respect. And so, yeah, the Disney, no Disney thing was an accident. That wasn't because I was super passionate about being unique. I didn't want to piss this person off. But then it worked because people who had pink hair could work here and they were happy and they were themselves and they stayed.
So if I'm applying for a job and I walk in there with pink hair, are you like, okay, that's the guy?
Yeah. I mean, we do have rules for, like, you know, you can't have roots and you and oh my God, when ombre hair came, I was like, what's going on? It just looks like they all have roots.
Ombre hair.
That was fact. Or something John just made up.
Ah. Are you ready for some fan questions?
We have fans. That's exciting.
Yes, you have lots of fans. We'll start with Katia Lopez, aka Zany Zoe, out of Southern California, says she has such a magical website. It's not really a question. It's kind of an answer. But truly, one of my favorite things about your website, and I don't know if I'm giving away any secrets here, it's when your website is buffering, if it's looking for something, And usually, not with your website, but usually, you know, you get the what I call the circle of death, you know, that little circle that keeps searching. But instead of that circle of death, yours says things like, snagging our package rates, they're extra fancy, so they take a little time to load. And little fairy sayings and things while people are waiting. I think that's wonderful. That's amazing.
Thank you. You know, the funny where that came from was back in 2006 when I was trying to build our first website. I obviously didn't know what the heck I was doing. And at that time, there weren't super easy website building thingies. You know, they're just very simple ones. The one I used was called Homestead. I didn't know how to center an image. I didn't know how to change a font, really. So I did everything in Photoshop, like the entire page Photoshop. So if you load that onto a website, it takes forever to load, right? So this blank page would be there and then nothing else until the big image loaded. So I just put text on the page randomly and it was like, there are elves working over here. There's fairies working down here, because that would load first. And then the big image would load. So I kind of think it's funny that it's connected to that. Play is the biggest word I could use in every single customer facing thing that you have. Your voicemail, I don't know if you've heard our voicemail before, but if you call our phone number, which is on our website, I recommend doing it. It's cute. There's different buttons that will like play a game. You can hear songs being sung. It's fun. Why not? Text messages that you send to us. We have silly gifts that we'll send back and forth. Like everything should be playful.
Oh, that's great. And creating a wonderful experience for a potential client.
Yeah. Even your contracts, your receipts, your email titles, like everything. This is your one chance. You've got their eyeballs. Entertain them.
Great advice. All right. Another fan question. Virginia Hankins, your friend, owner of LA Mermaid School and Milo the Unicorn, and episode 127 of the Variety Artist podcast, of course, says, ask her about inventory control and training to keep up training quality when leading a big performer organization. So I guess that's really two questions. Mm-hmm. First, inventory control.
Inventory control. I made the huge mistake of expanding our office space too quickly to hold inventory. That is the dumbest use of money. If you have the ability to put inventory into a very inexpensive place, whether it be a storage unit or another part of town that's less expensive than your main headquarters, do that. Don't pay too much per square footage. Another thing is that you need to, it's very easy to think, oh, I have inventory. I'm going to figure out a way to catalog all of this because I am big and fancy. Sometimes you just have to realize when something is a waste of time. I think we probably spent $50,000, $60,000 trying to catalog all of our costumes and create these big systems and scanners. And we were spending so much time just trying to deal with that. It wasn't solving the problem, which is when performers would retire, they'd accidentally forget something at home. We wouldn't even notice it, but it'd be a $100 item, right? And that catches up. But it never equaled 60 grand. And it also was a totally boring job. You got to weigh pros and cons.
All right. So that's inventory control. How about keeping up the training quality?
I have Meadow, who is not even human, who works for me. No, we make a great team. So when you have somebody who is in charge of actual humans' level of production, it's very easy to overlook and underlook, if that's even a word, parts where they need to be stronger. So my point is, you need to have a team. Even if you are a one-man thing, find somebody who can give you constructive criticism about your own performance. You know, find that talking person. If you're a smaller team, you know, two, three people, share that job. And, you know, you can use it here in marketing advantage too. I mean, we often will donate shows to schools or daycares or whatever, which creates wonderful social media buzz. Also, you're now introduced to all these families because the kid comes home and says, I saw a fairy, right? But we're doing that with people who are in training. So older performers will come and watch those performances of the new people who are doing the free show. It's kind of this circular process.
That's terrific. Well, thank you, Faye, for doing my show. That was fun.
You're welcome. Thanks for making me laugh, John.
You are amazing and lots of fun. You have any social media or what's your website? Give us all the particulars.
Sure. If you want to see my latest attempts at trying to figure out social media, you can watch me and Meadow fiddle around with crazy content at, what is it, Happily Ever Laughter Parties on Facebook, which is shortened to HELP for short, which is cute. So Happily Ever Laughter Parties on Facebook and also Instagram, Happily Ever Laughter Parties.
Thanks to all my Variety artists. Tell all your friends about the Variety Artist Podcast. Now go out there and book those gigs, make some money, and have some fun.
Bye.
That's all for this episode of The Variety Artist. But your journey continues on our website. Go to thevarietyartist.com for more strategies, insight, and resources, as well as show notes on today's guest to assist you in your career. We'll see you on the next episode of The Variety Artist. But until then, go out and book those gigs, make some money, and have some fun.